I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources, Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Purcell, do you want to move the minutes?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell moves the minutes for March 26, 2024. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. First up, we have House File 4550. Representative Kozlowski here. Okay, we will go to the governor's supplemental budget recommendations then. And we'll start with Bob Meyer, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Chair.
So Representative Kozlowski has appeared. So
okay, perfect. You want me to?
Yeah, we could. We'll start and then.
Not a problem.
I will move that House File 4550 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Representative Kozlowski, I believe you have an A2 author's amendment. Could you explain the amendment briefly?
Yes, thank you, Chair Hansen and members. The A2 author's amendment does the following aspects. It adds a co-facilitator of the task force, an expert in the field of industrial metallurgy. It also extends the task force by 6 months to give us a little more time. It adds a developing a strategic roadmap for achieving domestic recovery of critical minerals to the duties of the task force to make sure that it's very actionable and tangible what comes out of it. And very important to myself and to the coalition is ensuring public input, especially communities, frontline communities and others are heard. And so make sure that there's at least one public meeting, an opportunity to gather comments. And then finally it adds an expiration to the task force 1 year after the report is submitted, just in case there are reason as need to consult and tap the members of the task force.
I will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Kozlowski, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair and members. And for the opportunity to present House File 4550, this is a bill that will create a critical minerals recovery advisory task force that will help us ensure Minnesota leads the way in recycling the materials that we need to build a strong and clean future for all. I'm really proud to be able to address this important issue in a way that brings together a very diverse coalition of supporters. This is a particularly important topic in northern Minnesota and across the state. And so being able to bring together this coalition made up of unions, of U.S. steelworkers, to environmental organizations like the Sierra Club and Conservation Minnesota, as well as groups like Mining Minnesota. We're all committed to building a circular economy here in Minnesota, and we need policies that ensure we are leading the way on recovering these minerals to build that thriving clean future. And focusing on what we do with materials once they've been collected and diverted from the waste stream is the very first step to ensuring that strong circular economy. Too much of what is already being collected and recycled is exported to other states or even to other countries for recovery after the dismantling and shredding phase of processing. And that's especially true for materials containing critical minerals, which are most often processed internationally instead of right here at home. Critical minerals are essential to a clean energy future, particularly for energy storage batteries, EV batteries, wind and solar components. Elements and minerals such as lithium and cobalt, manganese and carbon are essential for batteries. Other critical minerals such as nickel and zinc and silicone and aluminum are also essential for clean energy parts and products. And we should really be processing those minerals right here in Minnesota to keep them domestic and grow good paying jobs right in our communities. This is a really important issue right now and into the future. Mineral demand is expected to double by 2040, under current climate policy commitments and according to the International Energy Agency, and could actually quadruple if the global deployments of EVs and renewable energy technologies ramp up in line with international commitments. So we need to build the recycling industry, and we need to get the job done. And that's why we need a critical minerals recovery advisory task force to get that plan going and to create that roadmap to our future. So this bill will help us attract those new industries and good paying jobs, safe jobs to communities around Minnesota, and will also contribute to our clean energy goals while protecting our air and water. We should create conditions needed to build Minnesota's clean energy here in Minnesota, and recycling these critical minerals can help us to create that resilient and localized supply chains that we know we desperately need, especially up in northern Minnesota and on the Iron Range. So HF 4550 will put us on that path, and I hope to earn your support for this bill and along with our coalition. So next, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers to share more.
First up, Patty O'Keefe, Sierra Club. Welcome.
Thank you. Dear members of the House Environment and Natural Resources Committee, my name is Patty O'Keefe. I am here on behalf of the Sierra Club North Star chapter, encouraging your support for House File 4550 to establish a task force dedicated to enhancing the recovery of critical minerals from end-life products. House File 4450 represents a significant step towards advancing sustainable materials management practices in our state. By establishing a dedicated task force and fostering collaboration among amongst diverse stakeholders, this legislation has the potential to drive meaningful progress towards a more circular and resource-efficient economy. We appreciate the provision to engage stakeholders in meaningful consultation regarding recycling and end-of-life management options. By fostering collaboration amongst environmental advocates, community members, industry representatives, this legislation promotes transparency and inclusivity in decision-making processes, ultimately contributing to the development of effective and equitable solutions. The North Star chapter also recognizes the importance of establishing the necessary infrastructure to support an integrated system for collecting, transporting, and recycling products containing critical minerals. By addressing these infrastructure gaps, we can streamline material recovery, thereby reducing waste and minimizing environmental impacts. Overall, this bill will set the process in motion to create new waste and recycling streams that will create jobs and reduce environmental harms, and also address environmental justice issues in communities that are affected by extraction. So really appreciate your consideration and would encourage your support of this bill today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Paul Slaherty, Teamsters Local 120.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Slattery, and I'm the Director of Politics and Organizing for the Teamsters Union Local 120. I'm here to speak in support of House File 4550. We represent 11,000 members across the states of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa, including a recently organized group called Ridwell Recycling in St. Paul. Teamsters represent workers across the recycling supply chain, from collections, dismantling, and processing to organics waste. Teamsters are also industrial workers representing Gopher Resource in Eagan, Minnesota, processing lead batteries. However, we are missing the necessary domestic infrastructure to achieve a truly circular recycling model, and that is industry recovery infrastructure for critical materials like copper, lithium, palladium, and more. We need a high road operator who will care for the workers' health and safety while helping Minnesota achieve its clean energy and recycling goals. End-of-life products like electronics pile up in our houses, which could be harnessed to help us meet our clean energy goals. Ridwell collects recycling waste from individual residents like old phones, phone cords, screens, and other equipment that should not be thrown away. Worldwide, we generate around 40 million tons of electronic waste annually, and only 12.5% of e-waste is recycled. Ridwell takes pride in processing their materials domestically, and we want to help achieve a high-road domestic supply chain of recycled materials through and through. When we process and recover materials at home, we can have a greater impact on the labor and environmental standards operators are held to. We have the opportunity to create a truly circular economy in Minnesota, and Teamsters want to be part of that story. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4550 today.
Thank you. James Lehner, Conservation Minnesota. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. For the record, my name is James Lehner. I'm the Policy Associate at Conservation Minnesota. We represent members from all 87 counties in advocating for policies that ensure clean water, land, and air for every Minnesotan. And today I'm here to speak in support of House File 4550 and the establishment of a Critical Materials Recovery Advisory Task Force. This bill would provide the Pollution Control Agency with another tool for managing the valuable materials currently lost in our waste stream and an opportunity to create a truly circular system that puts our waste to good use. You've undoubtedly heard a lot about Minnesota's trash and waste issues this session, from reducing single-use plastics to updating our electronic waste programs. Many of the facts that underlie those needs are relevant here, so I'll summarize. We're producing more waste than our system can manage. Our dependence on landfills and incinerators is environmentally damaging and unsustainable, and we're losing tons of valuable, reusable materials in our waste stream every year. In the case of these designated critical materials, much of our electronic waste contains resources like lithium, cobalt, manganese, and zinc, which are necessary pieces to developing the wind, solar, and hydrogen technology we need to meet our clean energy goals. We currently rely heavily on the foreign extraction and importation of these minerals while sitting on a large reserve of these minerals in our waste stream. This presents us with an incredible opportunity to fuel our clean energy transition through a truly circular system where the minerals we recover are put back into production to build out our renewable energy system. We can do this in a way that creates more good jobs in Minnesota and brings us closer to meeting our larger environmental targets. Through the task force proposed in this legislation, we can begin to study the methods, technologies, and infrastructure we need to close the loop on this system and develop a robust Minnesotan economy of material recovery and technology development. For those reasons, we believe House File 4550 is a great step to developing modern solutions to our waste issues. It addresses problems in our waste stream, provides us with resources for our clean energy development, and enables us to implement better reuse plans for these critical materials. I'd like to thank Representative Kozlowski for offering this bill, and I thank the committee for their time this afternoon.
Thank you. Bob Ryan, United Steelworkers Union. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. Bob Ryan with United Steelworkers, District 11. I'm the Rapid Response Coordinator for our district. I serve as 9 different states, and this is all the stuff that I work on. Representative Kozlowski, thank you for dropping this important bill. The Steelworkers Union thanks you for the committee's hard work this session to protect Minnesota's environment now and for the future generations. I'm here today in support of House File 4550, which would establish the Critical Minerals Recovery Task Force. The task force will create new jobs and opportunities for workers in the state and help us grow and sustain Minnesota's economy for years to come. Our union has long advocated for decreasing our reliance on foreign countries for materials crucial to our supply chains that we could recover, recycle, or process here in Minnesota and in the United States. In Minnesota alone, research found that there's over 266 million pounds of e-waste available for recycling every year, which would greatly decrease our country's reliance on foreign products if we were able to tap into that potential. It's essential to still mine, recover, and recycle the critical materials our country needs domestically. Currently, China and the Democratic Republic of the Congo are two of the biggest providers of critical materials in the world. But they also use unethical labor practices like forced and child labor to obtain these critical minerals. The United States has some of the best labor and environmental standards in the world, which should be looked at as a model for advancing this manufacturing. Thank you for your time today, and I support this bill.
Thank you. Tom Johnson, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This is not the governor's bill, but want to express that the MPCA is supportive of this type of effort to pull in more critical minerals and to ensure we have the best information about how to pull those minerals out of our existing out of the existing materials that that we're using today. I want to thank Representative Kozlowski for meeting with the agency. In particular, I want to appreciate from the amendment the extra 6 months that was added to ensure we have a quality task force and report coming to the legislature that will be actionable. The MBCA sees the need for recovering our critical minerals, and I won't belabor this, Mr. Chair, because the other testifiers did a great job of listing these off, but minimizing environmental impacts, providing the materials needed to meet the climate goals that the legislature has passed and that are in the climate action framework, as well as capturing valuable materials that would have been otherwise lost and increasing economic opportunity in the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify and appreciate the author bringing this bill forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else in the audience? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Abby Hornberger. I'm the Minnesota Policy Organizer with the Blue-Green Alliance. Thank you for hearing this bill today and for Representative Kozlowski for carrying the bill. As you all know, critical materials are essential to our clean energy transition. You have heard about the need for recovering these minerals and making sure that they stay out of our waste stream, and Minnesota is uniquely positioned to be an example of a truly circular economy if we invest in bringing recycling recovery infrastructure to the region. Establishing this task force would ensure that all stakeholders are brought along when developing a strategic roadmap for recovering these minerals. Bringing this infrastructure to Minnesota would create greater economic diversity and can provide high-road jobs for workers in local communities while helping us achieve our clean energy goals and our recycling goals. You have heard today from our broad coalition of environmental groups and labor supporters that agree that it makes sense to invest in recycling in Minnesota. Your packets have letters from groups like Conservation Minnesota, Fresh Energy, the Steelworkers, and also from Mining Minnesota and the Solid Waste Administrators Association. Additionally, BGA's fact sheet holds information on the new and emerging technologies that are being piloted to reduce emissions associated with recovery. Building a clean energy future means that ensuring critical minerals are processed domestically and obtained responsibly while supporting good-paying, family-sustaining jobs is essential. HF 455 is the key to kickstarting a necessary conversation, and the work to achieve a circular economy in Minnesota will be realized. Thank you, Chair Hansen, for hearing this bill and for considering HF 4550.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else? I will go to questions from members. Representative Scrabble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative. I think this is plays perfect into what's happening in northeastern Minnesota right now. We found helium in the ground up in Lake County. Helium is used to make computer chips. If we can get the gold, platinum, palladium, whatever the metals are used in chips from recycling, the President of the United States wants chips to be made in the United States. We have the helium here from Minnesota. We have this product here from Minnesota. We could easily manufacture chips in Minnesota based on all the pieces in the puzzle, and we could do it here in Minnesota. So I look forward to working with this group. Thank you.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you for bringing this forward and building a coalition of business, labor, and communities, everyone, all different organizations, because that's how we move the needle forward. And, yes, we can do Made Right, Made in Minnesota. Boom.
Representative Gilman.
All right. Thank you, Chair. So one quick question I have. The folks that were picked for the task force, has there been anybody that's contacted you in regards to feeling left out of the process of being on this task force?
Sure. Chair Hansen and Representative Gilman, thanks for the question. And that's one thing that, you know, in terms of the coalition being very thoughtful and with the amendment, we actually added in, you'll see representative from Industrial Labor Union, from our affiliated labor folks, friends in building and construction trades, and then also making sure that we have folks that are involved in the end of life of products. We are also in communication with our tribal nations as well. Right now there's one tribal representative, and as the representative for the MIAC as a state rep, continuing to have those conversations. And I'll also hand it over to the testifier chair if that would be okay to from the add-in.
Proceed.
Thank you, Representative Gilman, for that question. And the amendment was, part of it was to address some of that. And we've seen that, obviously, the operator who would own the infrastructure and operate it would have some influence on this task force. However, there's not any that currently operate in Minnesota, so that's why they were added as a non-voting member. But we've adapted this based on stakeholder feedback. Folks who think that their voice is important and should be included, we have done that.
Okay. Awesome. Representative Gilman.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Any other questions? Representative Kozlowski to close.
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and members, again, for the great questions and for the opportunity to present House File 4550, which will, you know, really build upon the work that we've done at the state legislature in being nation leading in advancing us towards our circular green economy. This bipartisan bill made up of this amazing diverse coalition is really dedicated to bringing this task force to life so that we can get that creative strategic roadmap for how we can reduce impacts on the environment, for how we can create and sustain good paying union jobs, all while moving us forward in ways that benefit our economy for both local, state, tribal, and really our nation. So just want to say thank you for the opportunity to be able to work together and ask for your support. I believe that with this bill, we can really take care of our families and our workers, as well as the planet and the communities that we all love and call home. So just me, Gwich, and ask for your support in moving this forward in the omnibus bill.
I renew my motion to House File 4550 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, the Governor's Supplemental Budget Recommendations presentation. Commissioner Meyer, when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, filling in for Commissioner Sarah Stroman today. Thank you for the opportunity to present our 2024-25 supplemental budget recommendations to the committee. The governor's supplemental budget includes $1.5 million in one-time investments from the general fund to ensure DNR's successful operations for the remainder of the biennium, and $2.959 million in 24-25 from various dedicated funds, with $2.1 million continuing out of those dedicated funds in 26 and 27. Mr. Chairman, first of all, we'd like to thank you for the 24-25 budget that was provided to the DNR last session. This is a transformational budget which provided one-time investments in Minnesota's outdoor recreation system, paired with ongoing support for outdoor recreation and conservation programming across the state. The priorities that we use and the governor's office used as well for the supplemental budget this year are as follows: critical operating or implementation needs, time-sensitive or emergency issues that cannot wait for the next biennium. Going into our $1.5 million or $1.3 million general fund request for legal fees, at this point in time, our legal fees are set to be expended by the end of fiscal year 24. We did not ask for additional funds last year, knowing we still had money left this year, but our forecasted spend on those activities puts us in the red before the end of this fiscal year. And actually, early FY 25, this $1.3 million one-time appropriation would help provide those funds needed for the continuing work defending environmental review, permitting, leasing, and other types of regulatory decisions for the rest of the biennium. Moving on to the next proposal, Mr. Chairman and members, deals with our law enforcement costs. This proposal has two different proposals related to the Division of Enforcement. The first would be to provide $300,000 in FY 25 and $1.08 million annually in ongoing funds from the Game and Fish Fund and Natural Resources Fund to cover costs for the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association contract that was recently approved. I do need to note that this does not include Unit 18 or 19, which are the captains and managers. They have not negotiated that settlement yet, so this is just for the officers in that contract. In addition, this provides $2,000 in one-time funding to reimburse the DNR for public safety response efforts that have occurred in FY24. This is about one-third of the actual cost we've expended to date on those activities. Moving on to our non-general fund related activities, our electronic licensing system modernization, I know we've talked about that. Chairman Hansen, thank you for carrying our bill with the technical changes needed to implement that for the next licensing year beginning in March of 2005. We signed the contract last April before, it was after our biennial budget request was put together. So not knowing what those costs were gonna be to build out and to implement the system, this supplemental budget item is here today, and it is for $2.6 million one time from the Game and Fish Fund and the Natural Resources accounts to ensure the successful development and implementation of our modern ELS system, which will be on your phone. It will be an app you can have on your phone, and it will be really exciting. Everything will be managed there. If you're looking for lottery preferences or when your boat's due to renew or things like that, you'll be able to manage that all off your phone. The other thing that is related to this request is we are eliminating the special goose season permit. This is no longer needed due to federal changes, and the reduction of elimination of that permit is about a $31,000 reduction to the Game and Fish Fund. I'll note that there is also some simplification language in the ELS bill that eliminates the paper licenses for charter boat captains on Lake Superior, since they will now be able to use those on their app, and reduces an accounting and just a security issue with those licenses. Our additional budget initiatives, Mr. Chairman, include minerals-related rule updates, which would create an opportunity for potential long-term revenue increases. It deals with an algorithm that is established in rule. If anybody would like us to walk you through the algorithm, please let us know. Also, there's a $90,000 increase in the clean water funds for increased efforts for testing and PFAS for contamination in fish. And then the lands bill has approximately $312,000 in anticipated revenue costs. Mr. Chairman and members, that is our supplemental budget proposal.
Members, any questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner, can you talk to the piece around law enforcement, the $200,000 one-time reimbursement? What were these public safety response that the DNR was responsible for?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee. Both of these activities, both public safety response efforts were related to the shooting, unfortunate shooting of Mr. Cobb in August. So it was protecting state assets, the capital assets and freeways during that time. And then also in sentencing in January, we were asked to be available to secure assets in case there was anything arising from that issue. As I said, this $2,000 is about a third of the cost we've actually incurred. And we cannot, as you know, spend Game and Fish Fund or other dollars on those activities. They need to be general fund related.
Representative Lee.
Last follow-up. So just what was the second incident that you referred to, the sentencing?
It was when
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Representative Lee, it was when the decision was announced for sentencing, for charging the officer back in January. I'm sorry, confused myself.
Thank you.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I'm curious about the legal fees. Or is that also related to just those expenses that have happened in the last year, or how far back do those recoupment of legal costs go, or is it for anticipated legal costs in the future?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan, we've been receiving appropriations for our legal costs since 2017. They're for a various number of ongoing issues that are going on. There's nothing new that we've occurred since that time. But as I said, we still had a balance when we were preparing the biennial budget last year. We didn't think it was appropriate to come in and ask for more money while we still had money on the table. And now we've spent those funds and look at what our anticipated spend is for the rest of the biennial.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you. Just to clarify, Mr. Meyer, that is for anticipated future expenses related to any sort of legal action.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan, the request reflects our additional need for the rest of the biennium based on current active litigation.
Thank you.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming in, Director. Just had a couple of questions. I just wanted to start with the ELS system. I'm trying to remember, and I'm not able to, how much was appropriated last year for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hines, we did not have an actual appropriation ask last year because, as I mentioned, we didn't sign the contract until April. So not knowing what our costs were, and the biennial budget was already developed then, our plan was to come in with a supplemental ask once we had those costs more clearly identified.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that clarification. The other question I had, Representative Lee actually addressed the $200,000 additional costs for response. I thought maybe that was associated with COs being tasked to the state fair, but glad to hear that wasn't the case. I'm not super keen on that happening again down the road, but I understand that there was a need, and so thankful to those that did respond, but apparently no extra costs. So I'll leave that there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hines, those costs were paid for by the Fair Board, so obviously we wouldn't do that without being reimbursed, and making sure that there was no impact to our field work as well. So we're still, the Fair Board would like us to come again. They were really appreciative of the work that we did, so we're still in communications with them right now.
Thank you.
Just on that, I mean, is there like a meet and confer between the conservation officer bargaining units and management about their use in responding to things like the state fair?
Mr. Chair, there was not a meet and confer. That they don't operate typically on those types of issues. I do have Colonel Smith here if you'd like to bring him down for more conversation on that.
I think I'll wait. I do have a different question. So on the clean water fish contamination, testing fish for PFAS, did we ever get the report on the testing the deer for PFAS? Is that finalized or published?
Mr. Chair, we do have that. We can share that with the committee.
You could share that with the committee. That would be great. Members, any other questions? Seeing none, we'll move to the Pollution Control Agency. Commissioner Kessler, welcome.
Someone else is doing this. Okay.
Great. And Mr. Johnson. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. For the record, I'm MPCA Commissioner Katrina Kessler. It's great to be here with you this afternoon, and I appreciate the opportunity to review the supplemental budget proposals for the agency. With me is Director Johnson, who you've met, so happy to answer questions as we go through this. This slide summarizes the recommendations for the MPCA, and they are focused on the priorities of leveraging federal funds to advance climate change, meeting legislative and public expectations around protecting air quality, specifically in environmental justice areas, and effectively and efficiently completing permitting rulemaking and other efforts that involve our legal teams. As highlighted on the following slides, our recommendations include 2 one-time expenditures from the general fund, and the remainder of these proposals come from the environmental fund. The Minnesota Climate Action Framework and investments that you all championed during the 2023 legislative session have set the stage for ambitious action and goals for our state to ensure that we are mitigating and adapting to our changing climate. To build on this momentum, last week the state of Minnesota applied for hundreds of millions of dollars in climate funding through the U.S. EPA's Climate Pollution Reduction Program, otherwise known as the CPRG. The CPRG, created through the Inflation Reduction Act, will distribute up almost $5 billion in competitive grants for states, local governments, and tribes to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and other harmful air pollution. And Minnesota's CPRG applications, which were built in partnership with thousands of people across the state, lay the groundwork for necessary transformative changes to help our state's transportation system, housing, and food systems reduce climate pollution while lowering energy bills, creating jobs, and improving health and air quality around the state. The CPRG program will be highly competitive. I was with my colleagues from around the country last week and heard from EPA leaders that they expect that 46 states will be submitting CPRG applications along with many tribes and local governments. So there will be a lot of competition for the $4.6 billion in funding. And we've heard that they plan to fund between 75 and 150 grant proposals. And so leveraging state funds will make Minnesota more competitive for securing the federal investment. When scoring the proposals, EPA will target CPRG dollars to states that are ready to invest and act, and particularly in low-income and disadvantaged communities that often feel the brunt of our climate change the most. This is why the proposal is recommending $5 million investment from the general fund to help the state apply for and maximize our chances in the CPRG process. Switching now to air quality and environmental justice communities, the MPCA monitors and enforces federal air pollution standards at more than 2,000 facilities across Minnesota. More than half of these facilities, around 1,095, are in environmental justice areas where low-income Black and brown communities reside. The MPCA, where possible, has reprioritized resources to protect residents who often bear the burdens from air pollution, but these efforts are not sustainable, and without additional staff and additional funding to prioritize our work in environmental justice areas. So that we are proposing an appropriation of $2.97 million from the Environmental Fund in fiscal 25 and $2.625 million per year thereafter to hire 15 new air program employees to focus solely in environmental justice communities. These employees will monitor emissions, work on reissuing and issuing permits, respond to complaints, and carry out enforcement and compliance actions. This is the same critical work that the agency performs every day, but prioritized towards environmental justice areas. To achieve more equitable, inclusive, and sustainable, resilient Minnesota, we must commit more resources to these areas and to this work, to the residents who most often feel the negative health impacts from air pollution. The investment in the air quality program will allow the MPCA to respond more nimbly to members of the public and to regulated parties. As you heard from Assistant Commissioner Meyer, our legal capacity needs an influx in investment at the MPCA as well. The workload for the MPCA legal services team has increased over time. And currently, the agency does not have the inadequate number of attorneys to meet the increased demand. Minnesotans expect their government to ensure that environmental laws are followed and regulated parties need permits written clearly and quickly. The MPCA needs additional legal services to deliver environmental protections envisioned by you all in the legislature and expected by Minnesotans across the state. The legal services team is core to the agency's work of supporting a variety of work, permitting, compliance and enforcement, and rulemaking, and key priorities that you all set out last session, such as the cumulative impacts rulemaking and rulemaking related to air toxics and odor control, require legal support. Additionally, the need for attorney-to-attorney interaction with regulated parties has increased. And that is taxing our lawyers as well. So the request is for $525,000 per year from the Environmental Fund beginning in fiscal 25 to support the legal services team at a level that matches the expectations that you all have set and that the people across the state have for us. Similar to what you heard from Assistant Commissioner Meyer, to meet our regulatory responsibilities, the MPCA must make difficult and sometimes controversial decisions on complex issues that involve community partners, regulated entities, residents, and advocates. Agency decisions are often challenged in federal or state court or contested through contested case hearings, mediation, or in other venues. And the number of contested decisions has increased in recent years, and defending our work is expensive. The additional legal capacity will strengthen our ability to protect human health and the environment. So to successfully fulfill our mission, The MPCA must be able to adequately defend our decisions. We frequently work with the Attorney General's office to fill staffing gaps or provide technical expertise that may not exist in-house, and this is why the proposal includes $5.5 million in one-time general fund to support legal costs associated with the contested legal decisions. The MPCA's current air quality monitoring network is designed to broadly understand the concentration of air pollutants, and for the most part, the monitors that exist today are fixed and are capable of collecting high quality data, but they're not designed for the purposes of identifying air pollution from specific facilities or in specific areas and cannot be nimbly moved around. Supplementing our existing monitoring system with a mobile air monitoring trailer, something that exists in other parts of the country, will help us respond more nimbly to community concerns and to ensure that our enforcement work is informed by timely and location-specific data. To help us achieve that, we are proposing an appropriation of $1,025,000 from the Environmental Fund in fiscal 25 and $535,000 year after from the Environmental Fund to purchase a mobile air monitoring trailer and to fund the staff and the analysis that would be associated with. This will allow us to provide more flexible and nimble response to potential violations as well as to those who have concerns about things that are happening in their community. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those are the proposed asks, and we are happy to stand for questions.
We got several questions. First, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, and to both of you for your presentation. I was just looking to get some level setting on the legal costs portion. You have a $5.5 million one-time ask. What are your legal, like, what was the legal cost for last year? Like, how does that compare? Where are we in that?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Representative Finke and Chair Hansen, thanks for the question. And I will answer generally and see if Director Johnson has other things that he would like to add. And similar to what you heard from Commissioner Meyer, we have continued ongoing contested legal actions, and we continue to be the recipients of legal action. I'm shocked on a weekly basis how frequently these things come up, and so I don't have the number specific at my fingertips, but I will tell you that what we currently have is not sufficient to cover it.
Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. The sum total of what we're asking in the $5.5 million represents the total, both some costs that we've not been able to pay yet in attorney's fees or anticipated costs at attorney general's fees, and then also some of the anticipated legal risk that we're currently facing in ongoing litigation.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, did you have a legal cost request last year? Was it 5.5 short? Are we next year? This is a one-time ask. So how does that 5.5 compare to what you will or have needed in the past?
Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so in certain cases in past biennium, we have combined our legal costs asked with the DNR. However, in this case, due to the specific cases that are currently ongoing, the potential financial risk to the agency to the MPCA was much larger. Mm-hmm. Than what, you know, the combined ask didn't necessarily make sense this year. We're definitely open. I think both agencies are open to a different type of mechanism to funding the agency's legal costs. So we're certainly open to whatever ideas the legislature has to make that work.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that, and I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I really appreciate the work that you do in court. I just want to get a sense of how we're how to understand this money versus the future and the past. So I appreciate your answers.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner and Director. I have two questions. The first is regarding the mobile air monitoring. Can you give examples of where you imagine that could be used? For example, at the end of session last year,
Mr. Johnson and I were on the phone several times with a landfill fire in my district down in Rice County and trying to figure out the air quality monitoring. And my second question is regarding those environmental justice communities. And can you refresh my memory? Does that include rural communities as well?
Chair Hansen and Representative Purcell, thank you very much for the question. And I think there's a lot of unmet need that we could, that could be helped with a mobile air monitor. Landfill fires is one example. We know that the US EPA has in Region 5 in Chicago has one trailer like we're looking to build, and then they have one that is a little bit outdated. It actually requires a diesel generator, which seems to negate the need or the some of the utility of that. But we also know that that is deployed when states have asked, but there's a large demand for that. So small facilities in environmental justice areas that may otherwise be considered small emitters can seem very big to their neighbors who have had to live next door to a industrial land use for years. And this type of mobile facility would be allow us to show up and monitor quickly. Currently, when we want to site a new regulatory monitor, we have to get power, you have to work out easements. It can take weeks in order to find landowners and the power sources that will be reliable enough to provide the data that is necessary to measure air quality. Last week when I was with my colleagues from around the country, we heard that the state of Texas has six of these types of monitors, and they use them at oil and gas fields to measure emissions or near other industrial sources. So I think there are potential uses around the state. And to your second question, there are environmental justice communities across the state, and we think that this could be helpful not just in the Twin Cities but elsewhere as well.
Thank you.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. So quick question here. Thank you for coming today. I just want to talk about the CPRG leveraging funds. Real quick, so $5 million one time from the general fund. So some of the projects that are going to be used, I'm curious if this is like match dollars or is this for staff to try to go after some of these federal grants? That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, Chair Hansen and Representative Gilman, thank you very much for the question. And the way that we are envisioning it, it hopefully would be a little of both. Like, if necessary, we could help instigate projects that were shovel ready and put up some money to get things going. The EPA has indicated that they are very interested in projects that are ready to go. And through the process that we have facilitated over the past several months, we now have a long list of projects that people want to do across the state, whether that's in the smart agriculture space or in the residential housing space or in the transportation space. And if we are able to say Minnesota is willing to put our own money up in order to help make our proposals more competitive, then we expect that our proposals will score higher. And $5 million isn't going to go that far, but it's like having skin in the game.
Mm-hmm. Representative Gilman.
Okay, so a couple of things that I was wondering. So if the match doesn't happen, let's say we don't get the federal funds, will that money then be put back into the general fund if you're not able to acquire that? Will that come back in?
Yeah, Chair Hansen and Representative Gilman, Director Johnson is nodding. And, you know, if we don't get the CPRG funds, which would be a terrible disappointment for the entire state, we wouldn't need the matching funds.
Okay. Thank you. Follow-up question, because this is intriguing to me. So do you know about the federal funds implementation unit that was made in the end of 2023 mm-hmm. and working with them in regards to this? Are you?
Commissioner?
Yeah, Chair Hansen and Representative Gilman. Yes, we are working across the administration, across all of the agencies, including the Intergovernmental Federal Fund Leveraging Group within MMB. The CPRG proposals reflect input and leadership from almost every single executive agency, and we have been working closely with that group and MMB and others to make sure that we are not being duplicative and that we are leveraging as much as possible the opportunities that are presented at this moment in time.
Representative Gilman.
And thanks. And just for the committee, just to understand, if you don't know what that that all happened this past year, and their whole goal for this new unit of government, it was there's a director and then three staff people that are provided, and I just want to read it. It's right off of the site here. It's to communicate and coordinate inside and outside of state government to maximize federal funds flowing to and around Minnesota. So I was curious if you would, you know, because that's their goal of this group is to kind of walk alongside them. And I just didn't know if, you know, the $5 million was necessary as long as that's what they're doing for our state already. That's what I was wondering.
Commissioner. Chair Hansen and Representative Gilman, yes, we have been closely working with that group of people and others across the administration to make sure that we are going to be as competitive as possible in this application and others.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I have, I guess, two sets of questions. The first one is related. Sorry, I was following along with Representative Gilman there, and I navigated away from my own notes. As you're talking about increasing staff capacity for monitoring, permitting, responding to complaints, et cetera, with a priority on work and environmental justice areas, would that increase staff capacity? Would their priority be environmental justice areas, or would that be their sole focus?
Commissioner.
Chair Hansen and Representative Jordan, thank you very much for the question. That would be their sole focus.
Okay.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's good to hear. My next, I guess, set of questions are around some of those legal costs. I know you're anticipating legal costs associated with cumulative impacts and odor and other rulemaking. So I guess my question then is, where are we at with that rulemaking if we're already anticipating legal costs associated with that rulemaking?
Commissioner.
Do you want to answer my question?
Director.
Mr. Chair and members and representative, to your question, I think just to clarify on the legal capacity piece, those are new lawyers to support those. So those are staff that would be supporting all of those rulemaking activities. So separate from the one-time ask, those ongoing would be supporting all of those rulemaking efforts. As to the current status of those rulemaking efforts, we are, as far as cumulative impacts, entering an exciting moment where we're putting together work groups. We've already had individual meetings across, public meetings across the state, in the areas that the new law will be applicable to, Rochester, Duluth, and then the Twin Cities Metro. We also held a virtual option. And then there, we're now entering work group stages where we'll be hoping to hear from community members, community connectors, as well as regulated parties, business leaders, all sorts of stakeholders from environmental groups, you know, really anybody who has a stake in this. To help build the different processes that we're charged to build. So that ranges from the benchmarks for what type of facility will be required to conduct a cumulative impacts analysis, to the types of health stressors that we'll be considering, as well as the community benefit agreement as well, which will be so each of those processes will have a separate work group to work through.
And then the other rulemakings,
odor perhaps.
Yeah,
odor as well as and air toxics are both in a similar timeline of that 3-year timeline that was set out by the legislature for air toxics and cumulative impacts, and we're entering that stage of again working on pulling in community feedback, and then we'll be soon starting to write the rules and going into that technical process.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. That is good to know. So this would just be supplementing the existing rulemaking process to ensure that these new rules are good to go, are within our standards, and will help these rules work to ensure policy is enacted. is what I'm understanding. I'm seeing nods for if people are listening at home. I guess my last question is about this air monitoring trailer. And it's a similar line of questioning to what Representative Purcell had. I guess I'm wondering how you are envisioning how a community would request that. And I'm also wondering if that air monitor is designated only for environmental justice or environmental justice communities or cumulative impact or communities affected by cumulative impacts, or if it's for all of the state. So I don't know if you can shed a little light on that project.
Commissioner. Yes. Chair Hansen and Representative Jordan, really good questions. And at this point, you know, how somebody would request that, I mean, I think we would be open to looking at how others have used, how have set up a process for that, and certainly work with you all if you were interested in that. And Director Johnson has noted that it would certainly be helpful when we get complaints, which, you know, we struggle right now to be able to pinpoint the source of things because it takes a little bit to get things up and running. This would help us be more responsive in those situations. And as designed, it is slated to help us in environmental justice communities. And as you've noted, the cumulative impacts law is subject to environmental justice communities are the root of where that law would apply, as in the geographies that Director Johnson laid out. So that is our vision at this point.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner. My understanding is that not all of the areas impacted by the 2023 cumulative impacts laws, it's not inclusive of all environmental justice communities.
Correct.
Within this state.
Correct.
So would the primary area that these would be responsive to, would they be areas impacted by the cumulative impacts law or are state-defined environmental justice communities?
Chair Hansen and Representative Jordan, thank you for the clarifying question. Our vision is all environmental justice areas statewide, so it is not tied to the cumulative impacts definitions.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, just kind of following up to your response to Representative Gilman, so when you talked about the $5 million and projects, and so did MPCA identify $5 million worth of projects? That's why the number is $5 million, or is that just a number that could cover projects statewide that may total up to $5 million?
Commissioner.
Chair Hansen and Representative Lee, really good question. You know, we have many, many more projects than $5 million. And I think it really is just to show the EPA that we are willing to put some state dollars up to get things moving quickly. I mean, I think our total for our CPRG applications is up close to $900 million for the state.
Okay.
Representative Lee?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner or Director Johnson. So not focusing on this supplemental request, but going back to last year, you know, really appreciate you mentioning the work that we did around climate action. Can you talk about the climate resiliency grants? How much of that has been awarded out, and can we get a line-by-line list of those awardees, please?
Commissioner.
Chair Hansen and Representative Lee, thank you very much for that question. Yes, we can provide you a list of everyone who has received the benefits from the climate resilient community grants. We have had several rounds of grant processes underway. We've given out at least two rounds of planning grants, so they were smaller pots of money, and then we had one that was open recently that was for $35 million, which was focused on implementation in places where they had already developed their plans, and we will continue to make that type of award available throughout the biennium so that we can make sure that we are meeting those who are putting their plans together currently along the way. And yeah, we can provide you a list of the communities.
Yeah, if we could get that for the whole committee. So, any other questions? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good to see you, Commissioner. Glad you're here. I had a couple of questions. Number one, going back to actually Representative Jordan's questioning, the 15 full-time equivalents that you would like, and I think if I'm reading correctly, they're specifically to carry out air regulatory program work. And Representative Long has introduced bills relative to permitting and green energy. It just made me wonder if these folks are going to be doing anything relative to permitting. It certainly would be nice to see some more happening there with the time that folks are waiting for permits in Minnesota compared to other states. You've probably heard me talking about that in other committees potentially, but I'm hoping that maybe if these folks aren't necessarily going to be doing that, that there's at least a plan, because permitting takes way too long in Minnesota. So I just wanted to use that ask to springboard off of and find out what's going on there.
Commissioner.
Chair Hansen and Representative Heintzman, thank you very much for the question. Yes, we are aware of Representative Long's bill. We've been in concert working with others on bills that would streamline permitting processes and provide more transparency to how long things take. I will say that we are constantly trying to find efficiencies along the way and always open to working with people who are interested in being a part of that work with us. And then the 15 air staff do include new permit engineers who would help help issue permits, address concerns around permits in environmental justice areas, along with people who will look at air emission modeling data, which is a critical part of the permitting process that sometimes can take a long time. So it is a mix of both permit engineers, compliance and enforcement staff, and technical staff. It is Director Johnson has them. Okay, so it's four air permit engineers, seven compliance and enforcement staff, one emission inventory staff, one stack testing staff, one air program support staff, and one business support staff.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful. I'm not sure what the cumulative impact, since we're talking about cumulative impacts often might be, but maybe that could help reduce the number of days that folks are waiting for permits. My last question wasn't something that was actually in the governor's supplemental budget recommendations, but it's something that I often heard about last summer, and since we're talking about air quality, I've just would love to be able to go back home and tell my constituents that the governor is working on some kind of a, I know it's maybe presumptive to think that the governor could be working on I'm trying to get this out without being too political. Yes, thank you. But with Canada, the fires were incredible. And obviously we had a photo in your presentation. I don't know if that was taken during the fires, but that was one of the most impactful, most negatively impactful events in the last few years. And I'm not seeing anything specifically addressing that, and I wouldn't expect there to be in the government's supplemental recommendations. But if there was something, since we may have time, Mr. Chairman, it would be very nice to hear if there's anything happening on that.
Well, probably the whole climate effort is what is happening on that, Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair Hansen and Representative Heintzman, in as much as we'd like to be able to give appropriations or tell the Canadian government, you know, that they should manage their forest fires differently, that is not part of our supplemental budget package. However, within the areas that we can control, as the chair alluded to, we are trying to maximize our work around climate mitigation, climate change mitigation, greenhouse gas mitigation, resilience building, and making sure we're addressing health impacts from poor air quality with our supplemental requests.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm probably having, my expectations are probably out of line with reality and the potential for our governor to have an impact on poor forest management in Canada, but one can hope, and clearly that was one of the most significant impacts to air quality in Minnesota over the last couple of years, so I will continue to hope that maybe that's something that our governor could address. Thank you.
Anybody else? Thank you. Any closing?
No, thank you very much. Nice to see all of you. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.